Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There are some advantages of paying attention to Yosha. Yosha is the actual name of the individual called Jesus Christ by Christians. There is no Jesus. There was no Christ. His name is Yosha. And while the worst thing you could possibly do is to fixate on him and view him as God, there are some things that we can learn from him, because he was a set-apart, diminished manifestation of Yahweh. And one of them was, how do you answer challenging questions? So when he was in a situation, he was been out in the wilderness, had Nathan for a while, and Hasatan, the adversary, slaughtered up and said, hey, turn this stone into bread. Have a bite. And of course, the term for bread was the same Greek word that is used for air, which means that it was puffed up, which means that it was yeasted bread. And so Yosha was put in a position where he could either explain why he wasn't going to do that, or he could simply quote Yahweh's testimony. He chose to quote Yahweh's testimony. The insight, the lesson for us there is that since Yosha was just a wee bit smarter than we are, and since he could have reasoned his way out of any difficult question, the very fact that he chose to cite the Torah to answer the question should be an example for all of us. That's what he was doing. You know, matter of fact, I even had a fellow, before we go into his answer, a fellow wrote me this morning and saying, you know, the Christians use statement late in Matthew where Yosha was talking about the greatest statement in the Torah. And he was asked the question, he says, you know, what is the greatest statement of the Torah? Now, his answer is being used by Christians to say, well, then that's the whole Torah is summarized by those two things, and therefore you can do away with the rest of the Torah. I mean, the Christian reasoning is moronic. And so he said, but, you know, there are Christians that are using that to say that the Torah has been done away with. And, of course, in that particular situation, Yosha was asked a question. The question he was asked by the rabbis, what is the greatest statement of the Torah? And he said, the greatest statement of the Torah is, you should love Yahweh, your God, with all your mind, heart, and soul. Might. I mean, and he was to make that statement, he's simply quoting the Torah. And he says, and if you were to ask, you ask me a question, he says, what is the most important statement in the Torah? And that's the most important statement in the Torah, is that you come to love Yahweh, your God, with all your heart, mind, soul, might. And then he said, second unto that is that, you know, you love your neighbor as yourself. Now, both lines are citations of the Torah. And truly, you could summarize the Torah's purpose with those concepts. But before I get there, you know, how is quoting the Torah, answering a question, what's the most important statement in the Torah, and you answer the question by quoting the Torah, tell me how that negates the Torah. I mean, you'd have to use reasoning so twisted that you'd be looking through about 4 feet of prisms to get there at every random possible juxtaposition. He was asked what the most important statement of the Torah is, and he quoted the Torah to reveal his most important statement. Come to know and love God. How would you come to know God apart from the Torah? Answer is, you can't. How would you, why would you come to love him if you didn't know who he is and what he's offering? I mean, the only way you can come to love him is to actually know who he is and to understand what it is that he's offering, which means you have to study the Torah, the entirety of the Torah, to understand who he is, that he's the father of the covenant, and what he's offering, our participation in the covenant family, and what he's then willing to do for the covenant's children. That is what makes him lovable. Otherwise, you can't love someone you don't know. Only a fool would devote to them their adoration to someone whom they didn't understand what it was that they were offering. So it requires a study of the Torah, even to facilitate coming to know and love Yahweh, our God. But that really is the purpose of the Torah. It's to introduce us to Yahweh, introduce to us what he is offering, guide us as his children, so that we come to know him, come to love him, choose to participate in his covenant. And once we participate in the covenant, the rest of what is there helps us better understand how to treat other people. And one of the things that you recognize is that the best way to treat other people, to love them, is to expose and condemn the religious myths like Christianity and Islam and secular humanism, socialist secular humanism. I should probably just call it socialist humanism and remove the word secular. But socialist humanism that have beguiled them. If you really love somebody, you're going to expose those things which are harming them. And then you're going to expose the opportunities that will help them. And yet, this summation of the most important statements in the Torah, and it's not that these are the most important statements in the Torah, both came from the Torah. How can that be annulling the Torah? It points out the purpose of the Torah. And one of the things that this communicates is that the Torah cannot be comprised of laws. You don't come to love through legislation. No one has ever been loved through legislation. No one will ever be loved through legislation. Someone can't be known. They can't be loved. What you can do, though, is through teaching and guidance, you can come to be known and loved. So it is a very interesting insight. And here now, Yahusha is answering a challenge by, again, citing the Torah. And the passage he cites in its entirety. And it's appropriately cited because it communicates the exact same message that he was using as his answer. And so this is what he said. He said, all of the terms and conditions, the mitzvah, which beneficially, for the sake of the relationship, I have instructed this day. Now this is Moshe speaking to the children of Yisrael, inspired by Yahweh to help them better understand the Torah. He said, all of the terms and conditions which beneficially I have instructed, Shawa, this day, for you to genuinely choose to observe, for the purpose of approaching, by actually responding and engaging, so that you elect to genuinely and continuously live. And in addition, you choose to be totally and completely great. Actually increasing in every possible way so that you will be pleased to arrive and also so that you will become an heir accompanied in the realm which beneficially Yahweh promised in a sworn oath to your fathers. And so you should choose to literally and completely remember everything associated with the way which Yahweh, your God, walked with you these 40 years in the wilderness in order for you to respond, to approach, by exerting yourself through the process of learning and understanding, to know and to become known what beneficially and relationally is in your heart regarding whether you will consistently and genuinely observe, closely examining and carefully considering the terms and conditions of his covenant. Devarim 8:2 and 8:1. What's so interesting about this is that if you're going to render what God has to say, first thing you're going to have to do is learn Hebrew. Now, you don't have to learn to speak Hebrew. You don't have to learn to comprehend Hebrew by listening to it. In fact, I'm not even sure that'd be helpful. But what you do have to do, because God only reveals himself in Hebrew, there's no such thing as the tongues of angels. God only communicates in Hebrew. Full stop. And so if you want to know what God said, you need to learn Hebrew. Now, it doesn't mean you need to be able to speak it fluently, to engage in a conversation in it. It means you need to be able to read Hebrew words and know what they mean. Lots of tools to do that. In fact, the world is absolutely awash in tools to do that. Now, every one of the tools that help you do that, Hebrew-English dictionaries and lexicons and Hebrew-English interlinears, are products of religious institutions. They are flawed. They are dirty. They are dented. And so if you're going to do this, you're going to have to invest some time. It's not going to come easily, but it's something that you need to do if you want to know what God is saying. If you want to know God's will for your life, you're going to need to spend time learning Hebrew. No shortcut around it. But to do so, you need to recognize that the tools that will enable you to do it are dirty and dented. Doesn't make the process any less productive or enjoyable. In fact, it's kind of the fun of the whole thing is being able to wield to tools that you know are flawed into a text that you know is perfect. Because once you start translating what God said from the proper perspective, and what's the perspective? Yahweh is our Father. The covenant is His family. Everything in the Torah exists to introduce us to Yahweh as our Father so that we will choose to get to know Him, to love Him, and want to participate in His covenant. It's His children. The entirety of it exists for that purpose. Once you have that as your perspective, which was the answer that Yahusha gave to those who questioned Him about the most important statement in the Torah. Once that is your perspective, once you are there, then you're in a position to be able to use these flawed and dented implements to properly ascertain the perfect testimony of Yahweh. When you make an effort to understand Hebrew, several things happen. And by the way, if you want someone to hold your hand, and I mean that in a very grown-up sort of way, through this process, to guide you through example. You know, it's like learning to ride a bicycle with somebody having a hand on the back seat and maybe one on the steering wheel where they're jogging along with you down the street. Then I would encourage you to go to introtogod.org. Introtogod.org. And in the first section of that book, which is a couple of, maybe 1,200 pages, something of that nature. The first segment is called the Word segment. And in the Word segment, I'll introduce you to the tools. And I'll introduce you to the oldest manuscripts, introduce you to the Hebrew alphabet, introduce you to Hebrew grammar, and then to the tools, these dented and flawed tools that we can deploy to go about understanding what God is saying. And it's really not all that complicated, but and the single most important aspect to engaging in this ultimate voyage of discovery is to have the proper perspective. Single most important aspect. If you don't have the proper perspective, you're going to end up with the same kind of rubbish that the religious publications have, which is why I can't recommend any translation. Anyway, if your perspective is flawed, your ability to translate will be unproductive. So the single most important thing you can start with is the realization that Yahweh is our Father. Not the Father of everyone. He's the Father of those who choose to get to know Him who fall in love with him and who choose to participate in his covenant according to its conditions, who view his testimony as guidance and teaching. And if you view his testimony as guidance and teaching to be observed, which is to be examined and contemplated and listened to, so that you come to know and understand who he is and what he's offering. From that perspective, you're in a position where you can translate everything that he had to say. If you're not in that position, you're wasting your time. But in the introduction to God, I will help you through that process, give you a foundation, give you the toolbox to deploy. And one of the things you're going to find is that the unique thing about Hebrew is that verbs are infinite in time. In Hebrew, unlike most languages, and absolutely unlike English, no verb is stuck in time. There's no such thing as a past, present, or future tense. That's very hard for someone who hasn't invested time in Hebrew to wrap their brain around. That every verb in Hebrew is eternally true. And the reason it's that way is that Yahweh claims that his Torah testimony and he are one. That they're indistinguishable. If you want to meet God, read his Torah. You'll find him there. That his words represent him. That would be impossible in a language without verbs liberated in time. And Hebrew is the only language of its kind where there is no past, present, or future tense. Everything is eternally true. There's no abrogation. There's no New Testament replacing an Old Testament. There are no contradictions. What he says was true, is true, will always be true. In fact, his very name is based upon the Hebrew verb to exist. Was, is, will be, Haya. So that's the first thing that you have to recognize. The second thing is that you recognize that every Hebrew verb comes with a stem. Stem, consider it a branch. The stems are all relational, every single one of them. And they establish the relationship between the subject and object of the sentence and the action of the verb. How the subject and object interact relative to the action of the verb. What a marvelous concept. You know, is the subject the acting force influencing the object with the verb? Or is the object influencing the subject? Are they both influencing one another? Is it passive or is it active influence? Marvelous connections that are conveyed through the stems. The next thing you find is that Hebrew verbs have two forms. They're either complete or they're ongoing. Many verbs continue to have unfolding consequences throughout the entire fabric of time. Some things, whether they be in the past or the future or even in the present, are a completed action with nothing more that need to be done. And then we find that there are moods, and almost all of the moods are volitional, subject to free will. As we were having our quick review of Hebrew, and falling in love with it, because you fall in love with Hebrew, you'll end up falling in love with the author who wrote to us in Hebrew, Yahweh. A very significant number of verbs are replete with moods. And the mood determines whether or not the verb is first, second, or third person volition. Volition is not something we talk about a lot, but volition is an expression of free will. It, for example, the religious person says, I want to know what God's will is for my life. Well, if God has a desire, if he has a will, he will speak of it in first person volition, the cohortative form, for example. And so there is a mood that expresses first, second, or third person volition. What is your desire? What is your will? What is your choice? Always under the auspices of free will. So this is that is the color and the shades and the palette that the Torah is conveyed. These are marvelous colors, marvelously intricate and revealing brushstrokes, where every word is a treasure. And then to add to all of that robustness and beauty, the original Hebrew alphabet, the alphabet that was used to create the word alphabet from the Hebrew alph and beth, the first two letters in the Hebrew alphabet, which is the first phonetic alphabet ever conceived by man, that the original alphabet had each of the letters representing the sounds conveyed through pictures. And so you can look at each word, and without a lexicon or dictionary, if you convert the words into the original paleographic Hebrew alphabet, you can derive their meanings just by looking at the symbols that was used to comprise them. Every single word. And so that's why Yahusha was talking on the Sermon on the Mount, on his instruction on the Mount. He says, not a single jot or tittle. It's been changed to jot or tittle. The jot is really a yod. It's the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. It's the first letter of Yahweh's name. It's his arm reaching down and out to us with an open hand. That's the letter, yod, which was called the jot in Greek. And tittles are the strokes that comprise the letters themselves. And so it's saying that the images of those letters that comprise the words which delineate the meaning within the Torah, that all of them are going to endure for as long as the heavens and earth exist. It was telling us what's so very important. So first he gave us perspective, and then he gave us the tools. This is the palette from which to understand God's communication. It's not hard. I am not a linguist. I am not a scholar. And yet, I do it. And the only reason I do it is because I love it. Why do I love it? Because I love the author. I love his way of communicating. I love the insights. I just love going on the voyage of discovery with him. It's fun. And when your perspective is, this is Dad taking us on a voyage of discovery through time and space, through the very fabric of the universe and the nature of life, it's just a joy. And you see, all the pieces just fit together like jewels. Now, as that relates to this particular statement, where it says all of the terms and conditions, the mitzvah, when you recognize that mitzvah cannot be rendered commandments in this statement, and then you study what can mitzvah be and work in this statement. What does it say? All of the kol mitzvah, followed by Asher. Asher has two connotations in Hebrew. One is to make a relational connection, so for the sake of the relationship. So all of the mitzvah for the sake of the relationship. Or it can convey benefit, fortuitous, merciful benefit. So all of the mitzvah, which relationally, which beneficially, I have, the next word is shawa, T-S-A-W-A-H. Shawa, which I have instructed. Shawa is providing direction and guidance. You can not instruct with a command. You cannot provide guidance with a command. A command is an order to be followed. A command isn't something which imparts guidance. It doesn't impart instruction, it imparts a command. You don't sit there and if the general tells the private, march in that direction, the private doesn't turn to the general, what am I going to gain from this? What do I learn from this? Where am I going? Why am I doing this? It's an order. You just do it, and you don't gain anything from it. In fact, that general might be commanding you to march right into your death. But you're not in a position to question him, and if you don't question the order, you have no hope of understanding it. You just do it. Thoughtlessly, do it. And that would be the nature if mitzvah was a command, as all the religious publications would have you believe. But if mitzvah is a term and condition of a relationship agreement, and there's only one relationship agreement in the Torah, that's the covenant. If it's a codicil of the covenant, if it's a condition of the covenant, it's the terms of the covenant, whether they be the terms that we must respond to participate in the covenant, or the conditions that Yahweh has delineated that are the benefits of the covenant for those who participate. It's the terms and conditions of the covenant, all of them, the mitzvah, which beneficially and relationally that Moshe, as a result of having studied the Torah, provided by way of guidance, by way of chawa, instruction. This day, which he asks us to choose to continuously observe. Here's the verb, shamar. Yes, I had a fellow wrote me yesterday. Oh, must have been a... He gave me his book, and he gave me a... I don't know how long the letter is, but it was by way of attachment. I don't know if it was 10 pages long. Wanted to convince me that shamar meant to guard. In the sense of, I don't know how you guard the Torah or you guard the covenant. I mean, that's as I wrote him back, says, what does that mean? You stand next to it and ready to pounce on anybody that would steal it? I mean, isn't the purpose of the covenant to explore it and participate in it? You don't stand guard over it. It's available to everybody. You know, you want to offer it to everybody. You don't want to protect it. The same thing would be true with the Yahweh's Torah. You want to study it and learn from it and share it. You don't want to protect it. You don't guard it. But anyway, shamar is the active verb here. And it means to observe. What does observe mean? It means to use your eyes to examine something. Now, if it's a written text, the only way you can use your eyes to examine it is to read it. It's pretty simple. If it's an oral communication, you would observe it by processing what you hear. This happens to be a written text that he's alluding to, so we'd use our eyes to closely examine what has been written. Now, demonstrating that mitzvah cannot be a command, and that if you understand what is being conveyed, you recognize that shamar was written in the paragogic non-ending. Now you say, paragogic non-ending, what in the paragogic is that? It's an expression of volition. It's an expression of free will. It means that this cannot be an order. It means that the mitzvah has to be something that you can choose to respond to, that you can choose to examine and consider or not to examine and consider. Because observation here is written under the auspices of free will, where it is our choice as to whether or not to consider it or to reject it. Commands don't come with free will. But terms and conditions of a relationship have to be free will. Because if a relationship isn't presented on the terms, on the basis of free will, then it is not a relationship anymore. It ceases to be a relationship if it's imposed. And so by considering the words, you know, you would examine guidance. You would examine teaching. You don't examine an order. You follow the order. You obey the order. The very text of God's testimony, once you understand who he is and what he is offering, enable you to translate the meaning of the words and to understand them. All you have to do is have an open mind and view things from the proper perspective. And when you do, all the pieces fit together. And so this becomes not every commandment which I have directed this day, you are to keep, changing Shamar, observe, to keep, changing mitzvah to command, changing shawah, instruction, to direct. Now that's what the flawed tools would drive you in that direction. But only if you're unwilling to look at the colors and shadings of the palette that Yahweh has used to communicate with us. There's no free will associated with a command. There's no instruction associated with a command. And so, if you look at the words that follow, you recognize that mitzvah cannot be a command and that shamar cannot be keep. You can't keep a term. You can observe the term. You can examine the condition, but you can't keep it. You can't guard it. And so, when you take the time to look at the elements that comprise the palette that Yahweh is using, you unlock the mystery of understanding all of the terms and conditions, which beneficially I have instructed on this day, are for you to choose to observe. All right, in our last segment, we're going to make a little more progress through this statement. It says, all of the terms and conditions which I have beneficially and for the sake of the relationship, which I have instructed, providing guidance on this day, for you to genuinely choose to continuously observe. It was continuously because this was written in the imperfect conjugation, which means that it's ongoing. It's for the purpose of approaching. Law is a preposition in Hebrew that speaks of not only purpose, but to come near, to approach, to draw near. So for the purpose of approaching, by actually responding and engaging, asha is a very important Hebrew word. Simplistically, it could be translated do. But I have found, though, if you translate it do simplistically, then you miss the wealth of knowledge that is being conveyed. You know, if God gives you a condition for participating in His relationship, which He provides by way of guidance, which He encourages you to examine and continuously consider for the purpose of approaching, and you simplify all of that to do, then you're back to the command. Do what I tell you to do. But if you recognize that it is much more accurately communicated when you say that I want you to use your close examination and your careful consideration of the guidance relative to the beneficial terms for the purpose of approaching by responding, by engaging, by acting upon them. Then what you have is something that is consistent from beginning to end. So that, it says, you elect to genuinely and continuously live. So the purpose of a closely examining, carefully considering the guidance which is beneficially associated with the terms and conditions of the covenant relationship is that by responding to them, you are choosing to live forever. Chaya. Chaya is extraordinarily similar to the basis of Yahweh's name. The only difference is that the CH as opposed to the plain H at the beginning. And so rather than being Haya, it's Chaya. But it's the continued existence of life. So the means of continuing life forever, having life restored and revitalized, existing forever, is choosing to continuously observe, closely examining, and carefully considering the directions and guidance associated with the benefit of the terms and conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah. That's what this is saying. That's what you learn if you're willing to invest the time understanding Hebrew, the palette that Yahweh has chosen to communicate to us. Now, we are communicating here in English. We are thinking in English. We're processing this information in English. And yet, we're garnering all of the shadings and moods and stems and conjugations from the full reservoir of information that is laden into every one of the strokes of these Hebrew words. And that's how we come to the place where we can come to know Yahweh and fall in love with Him. That's where this leads. You want to live forever? Pay attention to the terms and conditions of the covenant. They have been provided as teaching, as guidance, which when we carefully observe, closely examining, that we actually have the opportunity to approach Yahweh, to engage in His covenant, so that we live forever in His company. And then it says, and in addition, you will be able to totally and become totally and completely great, actually existing and increasing who you are in every possible way. Rabbah. Rabbah means to multiply, to increase, to become great. You see, it's not just the benefit of the covenant. And this is where so many people just shortchange everything in this view of salvation, that they view that God grants them eternal life. No, He doesn't. What God does is invite you to participate in His covenant in accordance with its terms and conditions. And those who are His children, because they have chosen to engage in the covenant, that God not only provides them with eternal life, but something that's vastly better than eternal life. Multiplication, becoming vastly greater than what you are. You get the same math that shows the scale between Yahweh and Yahusha as a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. We then get the benefit of that scale going the other way by multiplying everything we are by the speed of light squared. That's what He's offering.